Hello, and welcome to episode 2 of the BAP podcast. The British Association of Psychopharmacology are celebrating their 50th anniversary in 2024, and we'll be joining them in Birmingham for their annual summer meeting, which takes place from the 21st to the 24th of July. I'm Andre from The Mental Health, and I'll be covering the event this year with my colleague Flo Martin. Flo will be live tweeting from The Mental Health using the hashtag BAP2024, and I'll be recording short in-person video interviews with speakers and delegates to share online as part of our coverage. It's going to be a great event, bringing together researchers and clinicians from around the world, covering everything from alcohol to schizophrenia. In this podcast, we'll hear from President and President-elect of the BAP, and they will explain what this organisation and conference is all about, and what we should expect at the summer meeting in a few weeks' time. I spoke to them on the 8th of March 2024, and our chat lasts about 15 minutes. So have a listen now, and I'll see you at the end.
I'm Catherine Harmer. I'm a Professor of Cognitive Neuroscience from the Department of Psychiatry in Oxford, and I'm also the President-elect for the British Association for Psychopharmacology.
I'm David Baldwin. I'm a Professor of Psychiatry at the Faculty of Medicine at the University of Southampton, and I'm the current President of the BAP until July of 2024.
Brilliant. So yeah, thank you both. Lovely to have you on the podcast today. So David, you're coming to the end of your stint as president in the 50th anniversary year of the BAP. So do you want to start off, just give us a summary of the aims and maybe who this organisation is for?
In the 1970s, there was an opportunity really to bring people together who had a mutual interest in understanding in more detail the kind of the causes and treatments of mental health problems. So this brought in a lot of basic scientists who were engaged in investigations of behavior with animal models, and brought them together with clinicians, mainly working in the field of psychiatry at that time. But that's been broadened to include clinical psychology and pharmacy and mental health nursing. So it's always been a very broad organisation, which brings together basic laboratory science with translational science and thinking about applications through to clinical practice. But I think it's important also to think about it the other way as well, and how observations from clinical practice can generate research ideas, which can then be examined in the laboratory setting. So it's kind of translational both ways. But it's an organisation that's thrived over 50 years. It's the second largest such organisation in the world. And it's really nice to be able to celebrate anniversary this year.
Catherine, what first drew you to BAP? Maybe you could reflect a bit on the sorts of people that are part of this community.
Well, I joined BAP, I think it was about 28 years ago, when I was a PhD student working on animal models of drug addiction at the University of York. And I just went to the BAP summer meeting because that's what people in my lab did. So it was my first ever academic conference. And since then, it has just continued to be a key part of my year. It's been so important. And I think why it's such a lovely collection of interchange is, as David says, you have the preclinical scientists, the human translational scientists, the clinicians, and you also have people working in development in industry as well. And we all come together on a level playing field, all with the same ambition to understand and to help treat mental disorders more effectively across this really broad gamut of activity.
Somebody like myself who goes to a lot of different mental health conferences, this is probably the most sciencey one I go to. Give us a sense of the sort of stuff that is being discussed at BAP.
Yeah, I think the program is very broad and also quite detailed. So we have a core scientific program, which is typically about 9 sessions, about 36 talks. And we try to make sure that each session there's a logical progression from sort of basic neuroscience through to applications in clinical practice. So some of the material within those sessions can be quite dense and hard to comprehend. But parallel to that, we have lots of other components within the program. So for example, we have these guest lectures. And the idea of the guest lectures is that it's very broad and people are thinking about almost the journey from basic neuroscience through to clinical applications within a particular field. We also have a plenary session that's very much focused on clinical applications. This year, David Nutt will be talking about his career in alcohol, which really going from animal work right the way through to health policy. And gradually over the years, what we've done is we've brought in more and more additional features. So about the last 5 years, we've been having a public lecture, which we hope to kind of raise awareness of the society and our core work and think about how we could reach out to a wider audience and interest them in this area. And I'm really delighted this year that Femi Oyebode will be talking about what psychiatry was like before the psychopharmacological era. We have lots of opportunities for young people to present their research. It's often the first opportunity that they have to present work from a master's degree or a doctoral degree. And we try to encourage as many early career researchers as possible. We have lots of awards and prizes and bursaries which support people's attendance. About two-thirds of people who attend are clinicians, and a third are more basic neuroscientists. And if you talk to the clinicians, sometimes they say, yeah, this has gone a bit above my head, but they always seem to recognize the importance of extending their knowledge of neuroscience and thinking about how that can then be applied to clinical practice.
I'm interested in this because it's about science communication, isn't it? And it's complex. I think a lot of the time the sessions at BAP have to be really complex and detailed and nerdy and all those things because that's what's required. And it's not appropriate to try and communicate that to the public, that what's going on in that session. Let's just let it rip and be nerds together and learn stuff. But sometimes, as you say, David, you might want to have a lecture on alcohol or, you know, what psychiatry used to be like years ago before drugs, whatever. I think the field as a whole needs to come to terms with the fact that there is a science communication need. It's working out which bits. And as somebody who's done a lot of this yourself, particularly in relation to antidepressants in young people over the last few years, a lot of media work, what's your kind of reflections on that?
I agree. I think we do have a really important role in contributing to discussions more generally about psychiatry and medications and treatments. And I think this is really important because there is a lot of misinformation out there and there is a lot of stigma associated with different treatments or different mental health conditions. And I think it's very easy now we have these kind of social media platforms for people to share things, which can be really useful, but there's also a danger in it, isn't there? Because you can get into your own echo chamber where you're only hearing things that are consistent with your own view. And some of that might be based on misunderstanding or misinformation. So I do think the BAP has a really important role in being a source of really good quality information so that people can use that information to make up their own mind about what kind of treatment they might like themselves or considerations for family members or for how to go about accessing services and things like that. The BAP has a wonderful membership. Many are active on the social media platforms providing some really good quality sources of information. But I think it would be good if we could consolidate that and put it out into the world in a way that would then be a trusted source of information that people could use themselves for decision making.
Do you think we are at the worst point ever in terms of how psychopharmacology is viewed within the public? I find it quite hard to get a handle on that because I'm every day on social media listening to lots of extreme views.
I certainly don't think we're in the worst point at all, actually. So I started psychiatry in 1985. I remember the day I started because I had an outpatient clinic to sit in, and people with depression were attending the clinic, and only treatments available to them at that point, pharmacological treatments, were tricyclic antidepressants and monoamine oxidase inhibitors. And psychological treatments like cognitive behavior therapy hadn't actually really been developed and certainly not implemented in practice in 1985. The tricyclic antidepressants could be very effective. They were often rather poorly tolerated and in overdose were really dangerous. A week's supply could kill someone if they took an overdose. And so new treatments were being developed in the mid-80s, known as the SSRIs, and they became available towards the end of that decade. And they were developed, actually, for greater safety in overdose. And then it gradually became clear that they were effective antidepressants in many people, and then that their effectiveness was also seen in people with anxiety disorders. At the same time, psychological treatments such as CBT were developing. So by the early 90s, 5 years into my career as a psychiatrist, suddenly, actually, we had new treatments that could be effective in many people. And people were prepared to undergo treatment much more readily than they were in the mid-1980s. So we have many more treatments available than we did back in the 1980s. And I don't think we're at a low point, actually. I think we have to recognize that the existing treatments are not ideal. There are a significant proportion of people that don't respond or respond to only a degree and are troubled by side effects. And if you're thinking that treatment often needs to go on for a number of years, you're asking a lot of people to take a treatment that might have side effects. So clearly, there's a kind of pressing need to develop new treatments, both pharmacological and psychological, and all the other approaches as well, for example, neurostimulation. But the way to do that is to improve our understanding of the condition and what is causing, what is maintaining condition. And this is the kind of material of the BAP, actually, is trying to work out what's going on underlying the disorders and also underlying the response to treatment. Because if we understand that better, we should be able to develop better psychological and pharmacological treatments that have more effectiveness and better acceptability in clinical practice. So I'm actually very hopeful as I come towards the end of my career that, you know, in another 20 years' time, we'll be much closer to having treatments which are more acceptable and perhaps more targeted at particular groups of people, because we haven't really got that at the moment, that kind of precision medicine of being able to say, yes, this person here is more likely to respond to that kind of treatment. We're not there yet, but I think in 20 years' time, we will be a lot closer to that. In fact, possibly even doing that in clinical practice.
And I guess the 80s and 90s were a very exciting time to be a psychiatrist because all this stuff was happening, lots of developments. And then we had a period of maybe 30 years where there was a considerable amount of stasis in terms of developing new drugs and new treatments. The exciting stuff now seems to be the kind of psychedelics. You've got John Crystal talking about ketamine, for example, at the conference. What do you both think about these? Is this really exciting, this field? Is this a bit of a fad? Is it actually going to really help lots of people? What's your sense, Catherine, of these new developments?
I do think we have seen a bit of a paradigm shift over the last few years in this area of potential fast-acting treatments for depression, as the conventional treatments take weeks or even longer before they start to have major effects. And this is a really tricky time of treatment for many people. And so observations that things like ketamine or some psychedelics like psilocybin can have much more rapid effects within hours and often lasting a little bit longer over days or even weeks, I think it is a really exciting development in the field. And as a researcher, I'm really fascinated by this. What is it that makes these types of treatments different from more conventional antidepressants? And if we really understood the mechanisms underlying this fast-acting clinical effect, maybe we could use it to devise treatments that are fast-acting and effective and free from the kinds of problems that you might have with giving ketamine, for example, repeatedly, or other drugs like that. So yes, I think it is a really exciting frontier. I think, as all new exciting frontiers, it brings with it lots of new problems to consider. And I don't think we know for certain about how these drugs are working, how long they last, whether you can still see it if you can more adequately blind your trials so that the participants are not aware of which treatment they've been. It's a new challenge for work in this area. I think it's really exciting, but also with lots of things to consider as researchers and clinicians going forward.
So we're going to be getting together in person in Birmingham, a beautiful, lovely city of Birmingham. I'm not in any way saying that ironically. I think Birmingham's an amazing place, really interesting city, really culturally diverse, loads going on. So yeah, lovely venue for the event. And it's in July, 21st to the 24th of July. What are you looking forward to most, David, about going to the summer meeting?
The best thing about the BAP is the atmosphere. It's always a vibrant, fun meeting where you've got free exchange of ideas from people from a whole range of backgrounds, internationally, of differing ages, differing experiences, and it's always really refreshing and uplifting. So that's the thing that I always look forward to at the BAP. What I'm particularly looking forward to this year, the fact that we have three guest lectures focusing on ADHD and on what the ketamine studies tell us about how antidepressant treatments might develop. And also the interesting area of what's called cosmetic psychopharmacology, with Dan Stein coming over from Cape Town. Dan is a philosopher as well as a psychiatrist, and his talk, I think, will be really interesting. As well, of course, Femi Oyebode's talk right at the beginning of the meeting. I mean, Femi is a fantastic speaker who integrates science with clinical observations and insights from the arts and the humanities, and it's really great that Amy is there right at the beginning of the meeting.
How about you, Catherine? You've been once or twice over the last three decades. Is it going to be different going as a president-elect? What are you looking forward to most?
Well, I'm really looking forward to meeting a great network of psychopharmacologists who come. And I think this year will be a particular celebration because it will be a chance to look backwards and reflect on what's been achieved, but also to take that time to look forward as well and think about what will come. So I think it will be a really vibrant meeting with people with long histories in psychopharmacology, and then the very kind of new PhD students as I was when I first went 28 years ago. So I'm really looking forward to that. I suppose the main difference with coming into being the president is the speech, which is probably what most incoming presidents think about the most, which is on the Tuesday evening when we have our celebratory gala dinner and disco that the new president gives the after dinner speech. And I've had great examples over the last few years from David, who's done such a good job, but it's one of those things where you have to be clever and funny together, which is a after dinner, which is a tricky combination.
Yeah, rather you than me.
You'll be fantastic.
Any tips, gratefully received.
We won't be live streaming it on Twitter, but I'm sure there'll be lots of lovely comments in tweets from people who listen to you speaking. So yeah, really looking forward to seeing you both in person in Birmingham, and thanks a lot for having a chat today. Big thanks to David Baldwin and Catherine Harmer for whetting our appetites for the BAP summer meeting taking place in Birmingham in July. If you want to join us in person, go to bap.org.uk now and register your place. And there are more podcasts coming up soon in this BAP 2024 series covering ADHD, cosmetic psychopharmacology, and also taking a look back at the history of the BAP, which is 50 years old this year. So subscribe now to The Mental Elf where you get your pods, click that subscribe button and you won't miss an episode. Okay, that's all for now. This is Andre signing out. I'll see you next time.